Welcome to the Magic and Mindfulness Podcast. You're joining me, Amy Maxwell, on my journey of understanding the world of light magic in order to cultivate mindful living. I'm so excited for you to join me on this path of discovery. My loves, I'm speaking to someone today who is a bit of a rock star when it comes to the world of spirituality, but also life in general. She is someone I have wanted to speak to on this podcast for so long, as I really look up to the way she approaches the mystic arts. So today I'm speaking to the wonderful Tree Carr, who is an American author, TED Talk speaker, deaf midwife, dream explorer, and overall mystic. During today's conversation, I found it very refreshing how, when talking about a topic like death that can normally feel quite dark or depressing, Tree has this essence and way of making it feel and seem so natural and comfortable. She speaks more with me today about how a near-death experience moved her towards finding her purpose, and how we can transmute death into transformational moments in our life. And we discuss the correlation of dreams and death and explore lucid dreaming. I cannot wait for you to hear this one. So let's do it. Let's start the show. So, hi Tree, how are you today?
Great. Beautiful day here in England. Cold. It's back to the winter. People talking about the weather, but hey, you always have to.
We always have to talk about the weather.
That's the external weather. My inner weather is really great, feeling very happy and positive and full of synchronicity and the flow of life. And yeah, just the inner weather and the outer weather are all good. So it's all good.
I love that analogy. I've never actually said that before, the inner and outer weather. I think my weather today is cold outside, external, in the Netherlands. And then internal, yeah, I feel similar to you. We're recording this just after the Pisces new moon, and that was really intense for me. I don't know how it was for you, but I'm so glad to be out of that now.
It was, and I don't normally feel intense for new moons. New moons,
yeah.
Have a little bit of like sparkly energy. I'm like energized and I feel excited and zingy, and this Pisces new moon was really emotional.
It was.
I felt really like, woof, like I need to step into something emotionally new or something. I don't know. It felt like a bit of a turning point that held a lot of emotive quality to it.
I agree. I feel
say that too. Others were saying that as well. Like, that was rough ride. I'm like, so weird that a new moon was a rough ride. Usually it's a full moon.
Yeah. I heard the same from quite a few people actually, but I do feel like, yeah, coming out the other side. So I'm happy to hear that we're both in sort of similar energetic internal energies today and just like, yeah, transitioning and moving through it, which is cool. And yeah, today we're going to be talking about death and dreams. I can't wait to dive into this. And we are both two Scorpios, so I have a feeling we're going to go all in on this conversation, like death is kind of in our nature. But before we dive in, would you mind, Tree? I know quite a bit about you already, having done one of your tarot courses last year, and love seeing what you get up to on Instagram and all that stuff. But maybe some people who don't know who you are, would you mind just sharing a bit more about what is it, that the work that you do?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for asking. I'm an author. I work in the field of transpersonal psychology. I'm a death doula, and I'm a graduate of the Isle of Trust in their program for transpersonal psychology, predominantly with altered states and psychedelics. And so everything under that umbrella would include dream work. So I guide people through dreams and lucid dreaming. The fact that I'm a death doula, which is also known as a death midwife, I help guide people through the zones towards their own deaths, death and dying and grief. And I'm an all-around nerd, really. And a triple Scorpio.
Oh, are you triple?
Yeah. I thought,
Ah.
for years I thought I'm a definitely a double Scorpio sun and moon, but my
Yeah.
rising, it was always like, it's either Libra lot rising or it's Scorpio rising, because my mom can't remember. It was within a window of time.
Ah,
I
okay.
was born, but being all out of it, when you're having a baby, she
Of
couldn't really
course.
quite remember. But the more I sit with astrologers, they're like,
Your triple
truly,
scorp.
truly, I hate to say, like, you hold the triple Scorpio thing. And I'm like, yeah, I kind of thought that. I was really trying to not be that for many years. Like, no, I've got the Libra. It's nice. The little, like, I don't know. Apparently,
Yeah, I
people.
mean, I feel like if there's anyone that could be a triple Scorpio, I don't know you that well, but I mean, just all the work that you do, it's so deep and intense and transformational that that doesn't surprise
Yeah,
me.
sort of. It kind of all fits in a very nicely tight, cliched kind of way. If you were to make a meme, it's
Yeah.
like, oh, how many esoteric things do I do? How many things that are like mystical or death related or.
Well, I love it. I mean, I'm a Scorpio sun, but I sort of just love being a Scorpio. I think we're the best, obviously. Of Scorpio would say that, of course. But yeah, I mean, it makes sense then that you're into death, and like, I mean, there's no one else in my eyes that could talk about this topic better than you, because I
Oh.
know that you're a death doula, and as now I know that you're a triple Scorpio, that adds to that. But yeah, I mean, I guess I would just love to know, like, maybe we start with the death and then we're going to move into the dreams a bit later, and I'll be interested to see how you think that they correlate and intertwine. But starting with a bit more of the death, what sort of drew you in to doing that work? And also, death doula is a little bit of a interesting concept, and maybe not everyone knows what it is. So I know you mentioned a little bit about it in your opening, but yeah, would you mind just diving into kind of how you started out with that work, and yeah, what drew you to being a death dealer?
Yeah, so a death doula is a person who holds space for someone who's traversing towards their death. The word doula is a Greek word which means woman who serves. So people have heard of a birth doula. So that's like a birth midwife. So a death doula is a death midwife or an end-of-life guide or companion. And it's a person-centered approach. It's very much rooted in psychological assistance, emotional counseling around grief and death and dying, and a lot of practical underpinnings to the role as well, from deathbed vigiling to helping organize a funeral. Also, to say I'm ordained as well, so I can conduct funerals, which I've done.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, so how does somebody get into this line of work? I know.
Yeah, exactly.
And especially because people think, oh, well, is that like being a hospice nurse? No, it's not palliative care. It's not hospice. It's not a medicalized role. So you
Okay.
have gone to medical school or nursing school. It's more of a, it's like a counseling role. It's a therapeutic role. So the training is really centered around, say, a lot of psychology, the understanding of the human condition, grief and bereavement, family dynamics,
Oh, wow.
a bit of biology too, because it's really important to know what happens actually when someone is actively dying. So what is, the reality of the body. So that's part of the training. But how did I get into the training? So how did, like, I didn't even know that role existed, even though it's an ancient role. And women have been doing this role for thousands of years, mostly women.
Okay.
There are men and, people, folks who get on involved, obviously of different genders, but it seems to be mostly predominantly women who've always done this role, and also seem to be more attracted to this role. Like, even in my course, it was pretty much all women. Maybe like one, maybe there was one man, but so it's a really long story, but I'll try to make it really succinct for you, Amy, as to how I got involved in working with this role as a death doula. If I look back at my long history of my life, I think it started, the death thing started quite young for me. At the age of 4 years old, had a near-death experience where I nearly drowned, but I was rescued by my dad, which was fantastic that he did that, because now I'm here on your podcast. It was in those moments that I was being pulled out by a sneaker wave out into the ocean that I had, my little tiny life flash before my eyes really quickly. And then, and also a real struggle to live, obviously, you know, grasping at life. But then a boundary dissolving experience where I surrendered. I became very at peace with the process. Like, okay, well, this is it. And in those moments, I became one with everything. And and I also felt deep love and concern for my parents. My family, for never being able to, their sorrow for never being able to find my body. Like, that was like, as a young child, such a weird thing, like this, they will never find me. And that is so sad for them. I was like, I was thinking more about them than myself at that point. And, so from that point onwards, it was like, you know, obviously I had this really mystical experience, and then my dad rescued me. Yeah, amazing that that happened. And at that moment when he brought me up onto shore, I was obviously, you know, crying my eyes out. Like, saw, and he put my put a jumper on me, and then he took a photo of me, which was, I thought, really odd. And it wasn't until years later, when I was a teenager, I asked him, "Why did you take that photo?" Because this photo is like in our family album, and I always was like, "Whoa, that was crazy!" Because that's me coming back from the dead. And he's like, "I wanted to take that photo to remember that moment, but also your eyes looked so unique and different, really deep." And in the photo, it's true. I have the photo here on my, I have it because I've got to remember this all my life. So my eye, you can't always really see in this. My eyes are like black.
Wow, they are really black. Yeah. Jeez. You actually look, for everyone listening as well, you do look a little bit dead.
Yeah.
Like in the eyes.
The eyes.
Yeah.
The eyes are like black.
Like a zombie.
Right? Wow.
Yeah.
And it, like, we are so, was super freaky to see that, like, growing up. And then when my dad said that, I was like, as an older person, a teenager, I was like, that makes sense. Because I literally faced death.
Wow. Oh, that's giving me chills. And you have that photo on your desk now as well.
Yeah,
wow.
What a reminder. That's part of my reminder of my practice of, you know, I looked into the face of death, but it was a positive. It's scary, obviously, but I had this, this sense of oneness. So I think that set me up for a life with one foot on the other side, so to speak. And then shortly after that, it was probably maybe 2 years after that photo, my grandfather died, and we were at his wake. And when my mom told me he died, I was so calm. Like, I just felt like, yeah, I know. Like, it was weird. I was like, I get that. Like, I felt like my mom was trying to put it in different ways, like, he's in heaven now, or tried to make it all fluffy. But I was sort of I was like, yeah, I understand. And at his wake, I was like, holding his hand in the casket and stuff. Like, people, some relatives were like, you can't touch him. But I felt very comfortable around it. And then as a teenager, my best friend as a teenager, her father was dying of cancer at home too. And I felt like I was with her through that process. I felt like I was somebody to lean on. And then anyway, after that, her death and that process of helping her, then started a series of events. So when I was 17, from the age of 17 all the way to now, it still happens, like 3 to 4, sometimes 5 times a year, I'll have this crazy synchronistic occurrence when I'm out in public and someone has collapsed on the street or been in an accident or is having a seizure or a cardiac arrest, and I'm like the first person there. Like, it's literally at my feet, and it's like so uncanny. It started happening when I was 17, and it hasn't stopped. And I keep telling my publisher, or my agent, my literary agent, I could write a book about how many times this has happened. So this has happened, you know, from the age of 17 all the way through my life, then up to the age of 40, where I had one event where a man with a cardiac arrest died in my arms on Broadway Market. And so in these times when this is happening, I'm the first one there to jump to the rescue, call 999, do CPR, but hold space for them. Like, you're not alone. Hold my hand, breathe through the pain. Like, look into my eyes. It's okay. You're not like, just, I'm able to jump into this mode. Then, when I was 40 and it happened, and the man died and I experienced his final breath and him looking up into the sky, looking at something with tears rolling down his face, just thinking, this is intense. Like, what is he looking at? And can he see something? It felt like he could see something. And after that, I was like, this is crazy. This has been happening to me since I was 17. This is all the time. Like, my friends even are commenting, like, Tree, every time we go out with you, someone's like, they're, you know, you're there, they're hit by a bus, they're under the wheel, and you're there getting them out. It's like, wow. Like, so uncanny. And so I just asked my dreams, like, universe, why is this happening? I feel like kind of a bit superstitious about myself. Like, am I some kind of weird, like, omen, angel of death or something? And so I went to sleep. And as I was waking up, I got a really quick succession of all the times in my life it's happened, in a way where it's connecting the dots. And then the sort of like eureka moment of the universe saying, like, hey, silly, this is happening because you're meant to be doing that job. And then I was like, woke up, and I said to my partner, I was like, what is that? Like, what's that job? And I was like, it's a job about this. Like, but it's not a paramedic, it's not a nurse. I'm like, they're helping people, emotionally helping them at like these death edge, on the edge of death. And I was like, what is it? I was like, oh, I'm gonna go on Google. So I Googled emotional support at death, because that's the only thing I can think of what I'm doing.
Right.
Because I'm like calm and I'm like holding, like helping them. And so I Googled emotional support at death. And I think it was like the third page on a Google search came up. It was death doulas. And I was like, what's that? Clicked on it. And it's like this training program from Living Well, Dying Well, UK. I read the role of a death doula. And I was like, what? That's me. And I, like, my whole body was like vibrating, like it resonated. I was like, that is what I'm meant to be when I grew up. I'm 40, but now I know what I'm going to be. That was like 10 years ago. So I signed up to the Death Doula program, and I've been working, doing that ever since. But you know what, Amy? It hasn't stopped. Like, this, the me being in the right place at the right time or the wrong time has not stopped. I was like, 2 weeks ago, I was on the train to London. I had to go into London for the weekend. And I'm on my carriage from Margate to London, and I'm sitting there with my suitcase, and because I had an event to do, and I'm just sitting, relaxing. And about like a while into the journey, I clearly felt my intuition say, Tree, get up out of this carriage and go to the next one. And I'm like, okay, I listen now. Like, when I was younger, I totally roll with it now. I went into the next carriage. It was way busier. I was like, okay, thanks, universe. Nice.
Where's my seat?
I sat into a chair. Okay, I'm in my seat. And then about 10 minutes later, we were probably a little, just pulling out of Canterbury, on the way between Canterbury and Stratford International. This man walked by me, and he was like in his mid-40s. And he walked past by me in the aisle, and he collapsed. And he collapsed, and he was in so much pain. And I looked, and I was like, oh, my God. This guy's having a heart attack. So he's he's gripping his chest and his neck. And he's like, you know, at first I thought he was choking, but I jumped up and was with him. And then the train conductor was there, and they know what medical emergencies look like. So he knew straight away. He got onto the call and said, someone's having a heart attack on the train, send medics to the next train station. And then he was calling over the intercom for a doctor to come, or anyone in the medical profession, but no one came. I guess there was no one in nursing on the train at all. So I'm there with the conductor guy, holding this guy's hand, just saying, it's okay. You're not, it's just try to stay calm. Just like, look at me, breathe with me. And I was just with him. And then we pulled up to Stratford. I got off with him and stayed with him until the medics came with a Fliberator. The good thing with the heart attack is you can still keep living because it's just about something obtrusive or perhaps a block.
Okay.
But with the cardiac arrest, your heart just stops. So it's more almost like it's kind of really deadly. But yeah. With the heart attack, you can kind of walk around. It's really weird.
That is weird. Yeah.
Still, you can survive it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it just means that you really need the help to, you know, to get it going again. And of course, go to the hospital to find out what the problem is.
Yeah.
But Amy, it still has, it doesn't stop.
That's so crazy.
Now I just go, university, I'm here. So
yeah.
I'll step into the role with confidence. But that's how I got into.
Wow. Being,
so it's a calling, right?
That is a calling. And it's like such an unusual calling. And I just love that you really, you know, it feels like it makes sense to you and that it kind of does keep happening. I mean, I would just love to know, out of curiosity, I know you said you're a triple Scorpio and you kind of, you know, you've done this training for a reason, but does that ever feel, you know, too intense? Because I can imagine if I was just going to meet a friend on a train or just, you know, meeting up with friends and that kind of stuff does happen. It's, I mean, it's absolutely beautiful in a way that it does happen to you, because I think, you know, the universe does trust you and you've done the work to also help and support people. But are there days where you kind of feel that's too much or too intense?
It's really strange. I never feel like that. I don't
know really
where the energy comes from. It's almost like I go into a zone or like an altered state of consciousness. And so I go into a flow state. That's the best way I can explain it.
Yeah.
And I go, like, time stops and it's all the power of the moment. And I don't feel like I walk away going, oh, negative vibes. I feel, I don't feel drained or depressed or anything. I feel positive. I feel concerned for the person, of course, but it never feels depressing or harsh.
But that's really beautiful, because I think there are a lot of people that could, you know, struggle with that, and that, you know, and it kind of leads on to my next question, because I think, you know, especially in the West, we find death quite scary and there's a lot of shadows around death. I actually was with my gran, well, she was called my nan, grandma, most people would know. I wasn't there when she died, actually, but that was probably the closest personal experiences I've had with death. My dog passed away, which is actually what triggered my spiritual awakening, but that's another story in itself. So that death, actually, now I'm thinking about it, was, yeah, a spark to connect to something greater. And when my nan was passing, I had never seen her so light and connected to something greater. Like, she wasn't very spiritual, but that was really like beautiful to see. And I'd love to know from your perspective, like, you know, also as a Scorpio that is connected to death is connected to transformation. Yeah. So it's quite fitting that you're a death jeweler, but do you think that we can learn things from seeing death in a different perspective? And yeah, have you got any thoughts around that?
Absolutely. Death is a massive transformer and a huge teacher. And we view it with fear and anxiety. And that's mostly, I think, cultural, because we keep death hidden away here in the West. So it's not really on display very much. It's all stiff upper lip and you just get on with work and we sort of punch things down. But death is it's so beautiful and profound. It's not, I don't find it scary at all. How does it transform people? Well, you've just mentioned you had a transformation when your dog died, because it is a catalyst within a person's experience. For one thing, the first thing that you realize is that everything is impermanent. Nothing lasts forever. So that realization comes to people at different times in their lives. For one person, it could be Like for me, it was like, you know, when I was 4 years old and I almost died, I was like, oh, wow. Like, this is, we're so vulnerable here. And it's not forever. For others, it could be, you know, the loss of a parent or a pet. And it comes at different points in life. So sometimes we don't even think about death until it actually happens.
Yeah.
And then when it happens, you realize like, whoa, this is, you know, there is an ending here. So what am I going to do with my time here now? So that can be a huge shift for people into moving into more transformative, connected and present and centered life, where you just embrace life in a more abundant and positive and life-affirming way. So that itself is deeply transformative. So that's basically living life in a very present, positive, life-affirming way because you know you're going to die. So it's just very simple. But that can offer great transformation for people. I've seen it with people who are like kind of depressive, like people with chronic depression. And then they get a diagnosis that or a prognosis that you're going to die in a year. And all of a sudden they cheer up.
Yeah.
But not because they're going to die and they're like, yeah, great. But they just, it shakes them out of their depression. Their depression.
You up.
And they start to live in a more like you just become more, you value everything more.
Yeah.
You don't squander it away.
Absolutely. No, I totally agree with that. I think, you know, and it's such a complex, but not, I guess, thing, isn't it? Death, like it's complex in terms of the things that it can bring before and after, and you know, the grief and everything around that surrounding death. But ultimately, I think even just having this conversation with you now, it reminds me that I'm gonna die. And actually, I was having a conversation with my parents who came to visit me in the Netherlands the other week, and I think we were actually talking about my nan, because she only passed away a couple of years ago, and I was really close to her actually. And you know, so we were just sort of reminiscing. And then I think my mum or my auntie or someone was like, oh, like, let's change the conversation or something around that. And I was like, no, like, we're going to die. Like, let's just talk about it. You know, it's like, we should talk about it more. It's then it doesn't become as taboo and scary, because I think we kind of just in the West, at least, just don't want to just, maybe it's an egotistical thing, but we just don't want to accept or discuss that we're going to die. And then it gets so late down the line. And then.
Yes. And then people struggle. They have, I see it when I guide clients. A lot of people get a dark night of the soul sort of episode where they freak out and they're like, who am I? What am I? They experience ego disillusion, a dissolving or a ego death. And that can be very challenging for people psychologically and emotionally. But that's the realization, you know, of like, you know, I've been putting this off and I'm not accepted the fact that I will die. My body will die one day. Mm. And it can be, you know, really challenging for people. But I always try to like be a death positive advocate, that it's not all scary and morose and depressing and all serious and po-faced. And, you know, we think of it that way because that's how it's depicted in films and cinema and books and TV shows. And it's got this sort of flavor, or this death has a brand to it, you know,
kind of does. Yeah.
This sort of it's marketed or the PR, but I don't see it that way at all. I see it as, there's a lot of humor. There's a lot of joy. There's a lot of cosmic stuff mixed in the mix. It's I when I guide people towards trying to feel more comfortable with death, I always start with very small tasks, like the observation of nature, and allow yourself to observe things in nature that show a cycle of life where there's birth and then there's some death going on, and then there's a rebirth. So this is the life, death, rebirth cycle that is intrinsic to the scientific model of being here on planet Earth. So that's a really good way to start, is just observing nature, observe the seasons, you know, observe the you know, the life, death, rebirth cycle within the seasons. Or you get really, I always recommend this one, which is really easy. It's just simply being with the sunset and allow yourself to honor the ending of the sun moving down past the horizon and really allow yourself to be very present with the process. And when you're present with the process, enjoy the beauty of it, obviously, of the gorgeous sunset, the colors and the, you know, the vibe that it brings, but also allow yourself to surrender to it, to its beauty, but also let it go because it's going into the sun, you know, thing. So part of it too is like a letting go, a non-attachment to it, and honoring that process. So I always try to use that as a little exercise for people who are feeling uncomfortable with the idea of death is work with the sun, the life force, every night on the sunset, and just watch how that changes how you feel about death.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. I was just going to ask you around that and you answered before. That was really lovely that you shared because, yeah, I think it is a complex, you know, conversation. And I mean, we're making it quite simple here. And I think that's how we both feel and have moved through and processed things. But I think, you know, when things do arise in your life, like it can bring up stuff, and it is just however you can help to manage the, you know, the process. I think some of these tools are really, really helpful. Thank you for sharing those, Tree. So I would love to move into dreams because I could probably talk to you about death all day, but I do think there is like, in terms of the lightness to dreams, and I'm becoming more fascinated with dreams. Actually, I'm really sad that I'm not in London because I always see you do really cool events with lucid dreaming and connecting more with dreams. I'm very jealous of everyone who can get to your in-person stuff because my dreams have definitely become more vivid. Probably the last few years or since my spirituality has become more open and all that stuff. And I would love to know in your perspective, like, do you think there's a correlation between dreams and death and real life, like the crossover between the subconscious to the conscious? It's quite a big question.
Yeah, they're very similar zones, aren't they, dreams and death, because they are the zone of the liminal spaces, the liminal thresholds as well. Every night before you fall asleep, you're on a liminal threshold, and then you surrender and you fall into your sleep, you fall into stage one sleep. So it's like a little mini death. And in fact, you can use the threshold states of sleep to practice surrendering in your own way to your own death.
Oh, wow. Yeah, true.
Guide people into. Mm-hmm. And also with even what's happening biologically too, very similar things in the sense where when we go into sleep biologically, our brain waves slow down from our waking chattering beta brain wave down to a theta wave. And then when we move into deep restorative sleep, it's a delta brainwave, the slowest brainwave that there is. And just before a person dies, their brainwave is the delta brainwave. That's the last brainwave that they experience. So there is, you know, similar correlations in terms of what's going on with the state of consciousness through looking at brainwaves. Which indicates that your consciousness is in a different zone.
Different state, yeah.
It's in a different state. And so, like, for example, when we're dreaming, when we're having our REM cycle, the rapid eye movement, we fluctuate between various brainwaves. We're in like theta brainwaves, which is the flow state. That's okay. The brainwave meditation and relaxed states of consciousness. And then we also have spikes of beta brain waves in there too that indicate like dreaming, and lucid dreaming would be like good spikes of beta because that's like being a little bit more aware. But when we're in our deep restorative sleep, we're in the delta brain wave, and that's where a lot of sleep science, they don't believe people dream in the delta because they don't see any proof of dreaming in the delta. So delta is when you're in your proper deep sleep. Your body's paralyzed.
Right.
You are out like a light. If someone wakes you up in a delta brainwave, mm-hmm. you literally wake up. You don't even know where you are. Have you ever had that where you're like,
yeah.
What, where, huh? You're like so discombobulated. you can't even, you know, and it is hard to even do something physically. So that's the delta. So you're really deep, deep under. A lot of sleep science doesn't think people dream there, but the jury's still out. I've read a few hypotheses that that there were a few studies around that. Yeah, there is potential that people do dream in those states. It's just you can't retrieve them because you're so deep. But in shamanic traditions, which is like the original, you know, the original sort of spirituality, and everywhere in the world was shamanic at one point, even Europe and UK, is that that is where the soul takes flight in the very deepest of sleep. That's where the soul takes flight and goes to other places.
Right.
So shamanic beliefs is that that is, you know, quite similar to death in a way in those states. The soul being your consciousness. You can use so many different words for that.
Yeah.
Soul, psyche, consciousness. It's your essence. Go somewhere else. So anyway, so with death, it's like that kind of feels quite similar in a sense. Also just in death too, deathbed, the act of 3 days of dying is very dreamlike for people. It's quite psychedelic mm-hmm. as well. And there's some interesting experiences that people can experience that I've seen. Deathbed visitations, people having visions, vivid dreams of ancestors and dead loved ones coming to, I'm going to come back tomorrow and pick you up.
Mm.
I go. Giving messages and other such phenomena that happens around these liminal thresholds.
Mm.
So there are these interesting correlations. And also if you look into like the Tibetan Buddhist practice of dream yoga, which is the practice of lucid dreaming effectively.
And what is lucid dreaming, Tree, actually? Like
lucid dreaming, it's a type of dream where you are aware in the dream that you're dreaming. So something unusual happens in the dream.
Mm-hmm.
It could be that you're walking down the street and this huge rhinoceros all of a sudden shows up on the street and you're like, how is that possible? I'm in London. There's a rhinoceros. It starts to charge you and you're like, oh, but you realize, wait a minute, this is a dream.
Right. Okay. So you're aware of that. Yeah. Uh-huh.
So yeah. I'm going to interact in this dream and interface with it in a very, like, I'm not going to get destroyed. So let's see what this is all about. So that's what a lucid dream is. And it's been happening to human beings for thousands of years. And there's lots of documented evidence of this happening in ancient texts and Vedic texts, and certainly the Tibetan traditions, because they use lucid dreaming in the Tibetan practice to prepare a person for death.
Oh, how does that work?
So you use these various techniques, which are you do when you're awake, in order to peak your consciousness into being very present, observant, and aware. Because the more present you are and observant and here mm-hmm. in the waking zone, the more chances that you have of being present, awake, and clear in the dream as well. So it's consciousness training. It's training your consciousness to be, I guess people use the word mindful these days, to being really here in the now. And so the Tibetans have been doing this, Tibetan Buddhist practice has been doing this for thousands of years in order to prepare a person for when they're on the edge of death, on the cusp in the liminal zone of death, that their consciousness just goes boop, straight into the bardo, which is like the afterlife state where they go through the bardo and go through all these challenges, that they're completely aware and they're prepared for it. So as soon as they go in it, they're not confused. They're like, I know what to do. I'm going to have all these trials and I'm going to move through these different different entities are going to come to me. And I know I'm okay. This is just that zone. Nothing can destroy me. And then they move through the bardo.
Yeah.
So this is this has been a spiritual practice for them for thousands of years. And but it's also used in loads of other traditions too. And some folks use it for consciousness exploration, inspiration, entertainment, and it was confirmed in the 1970s that scientifically, yes, lucid dreaming exists. So, you know, before that, everyone was just like, what's this mystical stuff? People are saying you can wake up in a dream, that you're in another dimension, that you're conscious and aware. There's no way, there's no way. But it has been proven. Dr. Keith Hearn in the 70s did a series of sleep lab experiments and was able to document the first lucid dream recorded by science. And it does actually exist. So science backs it up. And like everything in science, right? Sometimes the mystics get there first. They're the ones first to explore it and go, this happens. And then the science catches up. But it can be very transformative. So you can use dreams and death interchangeably in terms of a practice.
That's so cool. Ah, so much in that. I love that all. That's really interesting. And I think it's also just like, there's so many things that you've been sharing today that sort of bring back that whole feeling of comfort, you know, just kind of, I'm going to try that one, I think, just before I go to bed, of just sort of, just surrendering into the sleep, I think is a beautiful practice. I've actually been really struggling to sleep lately just because of like overactive thinking, and it's been, that's cool. I'm going to try that one.
yes.
And I would love to know a bit more about, if you've got, because I know you do some of these workshops as well, where you kind of have events around lucid dreaming and guide people into that more. If someone wants to dive deeper into their dreams, and also kind of, sometimes what I do when I go to sleep is, if I'm in a sort of tumultuous time and I really need some guidance, I will go to bed and say, like, can you give me some messages, like, to my guides, or can I receive something in my dreams? And sometimes things come up, sometimes they don't. And I don't really have a journal or anything like that. But do you have any sort of tips for people who can kind of start to become more conscious of the lucid dreaming, and how they can, get deeper into that practice, basically?
Yeah. So getting deeper into the practice of your dreams. So effectively, your dreams are the content of your unconscious realms coming into light every night by way of dreams, which is like films that you see. So if you imagine that, you know, when you go to sleep every night, you slip into the zone of the cinema of the unconscious. It's like you're going to the cinema every night, and it's the cinema of the unconscious, and the films, the dreams that are playing out in the cinema are your dreams. And it's trying to give you information about what's going on your journey, your emotional.
That's interesting. That says a lot.
Yeah. It's like your own Netflix series every night. And, you know, but they're there to like go, hey, Amy, like, listen to this episode.
Right.
You know, it's talking about like how work is stressing you out. So maybe something you can regulate or balance around that in your waking time. So dreams are great regulators, but they also can get really mystical. So they have their psychological benefits to help regulate your psyche and your emotions and integrate things. But then there's also some dreams that are like kind of mystical and metaphysical, and a little bit more like you're getting a big message. Right. From where was it? Is from your unconscious? Is it something coming from the multiverse or a guide? It's to be determined. So some dreams are very transpersonal. So a really good way of starting to harness the power of your dreams and work with them is simply dream journaling. That's a really good way to start. You just simply get a devoted book and keep it by your bed with a pen. And when you wake up, jot down the dreams you can remember. And the more you do this, the more you'll remember dreams. You'll improve your dream memory recall, and you'll trigger more dreams. All of a sudden, you'll be like, wow, I remember so many dreams.
Okay. You think so it helps to stimulate this sort of process of being aware of more of your dreams.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then there's affirmations you can set before you fall into sleep. Like, I will remember my dreams tonight, or I want to get a message from my dream tonight, or I'd like to receive a bit of help or guidance or insight. And so you can start plugging in a few affirming intentions before you fall into sleep, so you can add to the practice that way as well. But it's great, even if you just do those two simple things for a month, you will go far. You know, you'll realize that, you know, after a month's worth of dreams, you'll look back and read them and feel like you're just understanding much more about yourself. You might see repeat themes and symbols. And so this is good groundwork. So that's a really great starting point. After a month of that, then you can start introducing some lucid dreaming techniques that you can incorporate every single day throughout the day. They're very conscious, mindful practices of questioning the nature of reality, sometimes working with your dream symbols. And then before you know it, you're waking up in your dreams and you're able to interface with the dream itself, ask the dream to show you something or take you somewhere, or you can start talking to dream characters and ask them who they are or what they symbolize and represent. And they'll tell you things like that are so like profound or cryptic and weird. Like, it's kind of cool.
That is cool. That is really cool. Actually, I was wondering, like, just coming into my mind, do you have like spirit guides, and do you connect with them through dreams?
Yeah, so the spirit guide thing I've always found really interesting, because I found like I didn't know how to take that at first. I grew up, I guess a lot of people would always talk about my guardian angel, and so you know, that kind of concept. And then as I got older, as a teenager, I hear people like in the New Age movement say my spirit guide. And so I'd be like, oh, that's interesting. And then I'd hear about ascended masters and then all of these other things. So I've always felt sort of like, yeah, I'm kind of like open to whoever wants to come in and give me an extra bit of information to help me out. It's just sort of like in our waking life, right?
Right.
Join a course and that you have a mentor, a teacher, or a coach that helps you for like, you know, 2 months through a problem. And then you're like, thanks. And then you get on with your life. So I see sort of like these guides that come through in dreams or in other altered states of consciousness, very much the same kind of way.
Yeah.
And because of that, I value them, but then I don't get too attached to them. I don't go like, oh, my personal spirit guide, Mishko came in and he's so amazing, and like I don't get attached to them, you know, like I don't make them gods or in their own right. Like
I've
had different guides come through in dreams, and they've come through for like just, you know, 3 times and then that was gone. It wasn't like I was going, Mishko, where are you? They come in and then they go, okay. And then someone else, you might have a time where you don't have any. So I see them as it's great when they come in, but don't get too attached to them because they're doing their thing and they got other stuff to do. It defeats the point, right? Like, we're not meant to be like moving through this life, like digging in and attached the needy to things. We're meant to be expansive and free and always learning and evolving. But yeah, I've had some cool guides. Like, I've had like weird, like metaphysical ones with names and stuff. And then other ones, like so funny. I had like a lucid dream with Nikola Tesla once, and he was showing me how to work with energy in a dream. So I was interfacing with Nikola Tesla in a lucid dream. I also had a lucid dream where I was interfacing with Alfred Hitchcock.
Oh, cool.
he was telling me about shadow work, which was super interesting. And I'm trying to think, there was a few other, I had a few lucid dreams too with Terence McKenna, who is like a, who is a mystic and an author, a lecturer, ethnobotanist. He passed away, you know, maybe 20 years ago. So those I've had also guides that have come through as, you know, historical character people in history, right? Yeah, so it's funny, but they're great when they come in. That's sometimes cool. I feel sort of like, oh, I could use a guide this week.
Like, yeah, exactly. But I like that as well about not getting too attached. I think it also comes back full circle to, you know, what you're speaking about with death and just everything. It's just like just moving through life and just yeah, just kind of being present to what is now. And I think I, you know, just to be honest, like sometimes when I go to bed and I have received like this big message, I'm like, yeah, I want this again tomorrow. Because I'm like, why can't someone else sort my problems out? But
exactly. Sometimes it feels like you have those chapters where you're like, I need a breakthrough. But it's part of the journey. Sometimes we have to go through it on it on our own.
Push
through something. And but I think what happens is people can get addicted to the mystical experience.
Absolutely.
Because it's so amazing, you know, it feels it's just like so wonderful when it happens. But we're here on this planet to move through the light and the dark, and it's part of the process. And you know, it can't be all like mystical all the time. But when it, and if we get too attached to it, that's when people fall into need and want, and you know, and it just is, yeah, it's good to be balanced.
It's good to be grounded and here. Exactly. Totally agree. And I think that's a beautiful note to end on, because yeah, I love that so much, Tree. And thank you so much for joining today. I have loved this conversation. I knew that I would. I would love to know if you've got any stuff coming up. I mean, you literally are amazing. Like, you do so many cool things. I know you always, well, the last time I spoke to you, you had a book coming out. I think that's already come out now. It was a tarot book. I can't remember the name, but have you got stuff coming up? Any books we can buy? Tell us all the stuff.
Yeah, I've had a new book coming out in June.
Okay.
A new book's coming out in June. Oh, I should grab it. It's back here. Well, I printed it out. It's very different because, you know, I work in the magical esoteric realm too.
Yeah. Oh, so wow.
Spell a Day.
Love that.
365 easy spells and rituals to bring magic into your life every day.
That's lovely. I love the artwork on that as well. It's gorgeous.
Thank you. So it's based in elemental magic. So it's working with the elements, fire, earth, air, water, and spirit. And yeah, I designed 36 spells to even help through like new moons and full moon spells and solar returns and equinoxes and solstices. And but then there's also a lot of self-care spells. There's tons of dream spells too, lucid dreams, astral projection. So it gets really like esoteric with this book out in June. So that's a bit of fun. And I've got a lot of tech spells in here too, using technology.
Oh, okay, cool. We need to regulate the tech more, yeah.
But other than that, I've got also like events. Like I've got a retreat coming up in July. And it's called Liminal Land, and it's all lucid dreaming, altered states of consciousness through breath work, altered states of consciousness through dream machines, strobotropic light baths, and nature. There's cold water swimming. There's like hot tubs. It's like in the middle of an ancient oak forest in Snowdonia, Wales. It's like,
oh, beautiful.
It's going to be amazing. So that's going to be in real life. And the location is great. It looks like the Shire from The Lord of the Rings. Exalted dwellings, like round earth homes with grass on top, the roofs.
Oh, I like that. That's so nice, because I think in these, yeah, this is lovely. It sounds very grounding for the kind of work as well, like really balanced.
It's great. We did it last year and it went so well. And there's tarot as well.
Cool.
Because we do quite a bit of integration through the retreat too, because people are having transformative experiences through altered states and dreaming. Right. Now you need to integrate it too. Like it's important to come into a cohesive whole.
Yeah.
So there's also I do tarot sessions throughout the retreat as well. And there's art therapy. And it's really
amazing.
Creative.
That's cool. That sounds really cool. Well, send me the links and I'll pop them in the show notes if anyone's interested to check those out and the book as well. That sounds great. Thank you so much, Tree. I've loved this. And I'm sure we'll hear more from you in the future. And thanks again for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Amy. Yeah, we'll chat very soon.
Thank you for listening to the Magic and Mindfulness Podcast, the podcast designed for the modern mystic and spiritually curious. This season, creative production is by Emily Lasbury and co-production by George Lasbury. If you'd like to stay connected to what we're up to, make sure you follow us on Instagram at Magic and Mindfulness. And maybe share these episodes with a friend or give us a review or subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. This helps us to keep spreading the message and light work that we do. We appreciate every single one of you that tunes in. So stay well, stay safe, and see you soon.